G'day audiophiles, and welcome to this, the latest edition of the Sirens of Audio podcast. Just a quick reminder, if you're watching us on YouTube, give us a like, maybe subscribe to the channel, and so you can support us that way. And you can also support us by subscribing to us on your podcast feed, if that's where you prefer to hear us. So thanks for doing that. To kick off the show today, we're not going straight into the episode. We're going to play the second episode of our brand new flashcast that we are doing with the aid of our friend Rob from the Doctor Who Show, Big Finish from the Beginning. So we're getting into the meat of the episodes now, talking about the actual stories number 1 to 10. So here it is for you now, and then we'll get into the episode proper. Oh, and by the way, due to a couple of requests, I am going to put these flashcasts as a bonus episode into the podcast feed. You can already get them as a separate playlist on our YouTube channel. So, on that note, here we go.
Well, everyone, we've got Rob from the Doctor Who Show back with us. We met him recently, and he talked about his journey through Big Finish. He's aimed to get through every story in order. It's an exciting challenge he's set himself. But we're going to discuss the first 10 stories. Robert likes a bit of a list, and he's put together a bit of a list. So, Rob, tell us, what struck you in terms of the first 10 stories?
What struck me was something I'd known for a long time, because I had tried to start the monthly adventures in the past, and I got stuck on the first few, and I thought they weren't particularly good. Actually, this even goes back further than me trying to do that. This goes back to when the Sirens of Time first came out, and our ex-local club president had imported a CD from the UK. And I said, what's it like? Is it amazing? There's Davo, there's Colin, there's Sylve. And he's like, I don't think it's so good. And we sat there one night, and he re-listened to it with me, listening for the first time. And I thought, yeah, this isn't so great. So that sort of put me off immediately, right back in the day. And then over the years, I'd try and start again, and I'd do the Sirens of Time, Whispers of Terror, Phantasmagoria. I was like, this just isn't connecting with me at all. And that's where I'd sort of quit. But later in that first 10, there is some great stuff, and I can't believe it's taken me so long, actually, to hear them.
Okay, so we've got this list of 10. People can actually go to a blog that you've done and have a look, but we'll just quickly run through the first 10. So you've put as number one, The Marion Conspiracy.
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was the absolute standout in the first 10. It introduced me to Evelyn Smythe, who everyone had raved about and said she's great with Colin. Of course, Colin's putting in a good performance. It's historical. I thought this was just fantastic. Jacqueline Rayner, hats off. Brilliant.
Had you listened to this before then, or was this the first time?
No, this was my first time.
So you've had all these CDs and not listened to them?
Some of these I don't have on CD. I've had them as downloads. It was mostly the Eighth Doctor stuff I bought on CD. But yes, I have had them as downloads for a long time. And look, I know they're on, what is it, they're on Spotify, aren't they, for free?
A lot of them on Spotify now, yeah.
Early ones. Like the first 50 or something at least, and I've not even listened to it on Spotify. I'm crazy.
You are crazy, but that's okay. You're getting wiser now. So number one is Marion Conspiracy, and then you put Spectre of Lanyon Moore. Why was that? By Nicholas Pegg. Why is that number two?
I thought that was just, it was just lovely to hear the Brigadier back. You know, quite simply. And I thought it was a great story. And of these 10, those two just stood out the most to me. I don't think Spectre of Lanyon Moore was as good as The Marion Conspiracy, but it's still up there. And if someone was saying, out of this top 10, what are the best two? I'd have to say Marion Conspiracy and Spectre.
So both Colin, both Evelyn.
Yeah. Yeah, they've had a real effect on me straight away.
Okay. Genocide Machine by Mike Tucker.
Yeah, Mike Tucker's a great author. I've always liked his stuff, which I'm familiar with through, you know, the novels he's written over the years. He's an old school kind of guy. He seems to get Doctor Who. He writes good fun adventures, and here it was no different. I think he particularly likes Sylve and Sophie as well. I mean, he wrote the coffee table book Ace, co-wrote it with Sophie, so he knows the characters. It's a Dalek story. It was quite good. I quite liked it.
Okay, and the next two you've also put in the top five. You put Land of the Dead and Fearmonger.
Yes. Now, Land of the Dead is a Devo story, so how could I not have it in the top five? But you'll also see I've got a Devo story in the bottom five. No, I thought that was really clever with Devo and Nyssa, the companion that, you know, Devo always wanted to, you know, see what it would be like just to have Nyssa around. It works really well, I think. And up in Alaska, in this cut-off sort of snowy environment, I thought it was a really clever story. Really good, really enjoyable.
You divided very much the first five and bottom. It said there was a bottom five, so there was some that you didn't like as much. Actually, you said Devo. You've caught up a few Devos in the second half.
That's true, actually.
Because I think what Red Dawn, I think Winter for the Adept, Phantasmagoria, is that?
That's Devo.
Devo 2 and Sirens of Audio. So, in fact, four of your bottom five have Devo.
The Sirens of what, Philip?
Siren. Oh, sir. I only think Sirens of Audio now, Dwayne. Sirens of Time. Well, how did you get the name for Sirens of Audio? So four out of the five in the bottom you've put Devo into.
Yeah, and that's more to do with the stories, I think, because Devo, axe socks off. Devo is Devo. I love Devo. But these stories he's in here, I just couldn't get into. I mean, look, in Sirens of Time, was it Devo in the U-boat?
Yeah, it was. That was the U-boat story.
That was probably the best episode of Sirens of Time. But as a whole, I didn't like the whole thing. Red Dawn, again, it almost made it into the best. But it just didn't quite get there for me either. You know, Ice Warriors are so limited. They seem to do exactly the same thing every time they appear in Doctor Who. And this really was no different.
One of the best Ice Warriors stories is actually a Benny story. There's a pretty stunning one with Benny, but that's another journey for you to go on later on.
The interesting thing about Red Dawn is that none of the Ice Warriors are played by Nick Briggs. So later on, he will do all the Ice Warriors pretty much. But here in these early ones, it's an interesting example of non-Nick Briggs Ice Warriors.
So the bottom five you put was Red Dawn, Winter for the Adept, Phantasmagoria, Sirens of Time, and Whisper Terror. Dwayne, what do you think about this list of the bottom five? Would you defend any of those?
Yes, I am definitely defending Whispers of Terror. I know it's universally canned by fans across the board of even Big Finish, but I've always failed to understand why it's so despised. It is one that's specifically written for audio. It can't work in anything else. So I think for that alone, it's a very, very clever story. Got Peter Miles in it too. Love hearing him. And I think it's a really scary monster. So I think it works really well. Justin Richards is still writing for Big Finish today. He's one of the ones that's been there from the start and still going. So he was finding his feet, sure, but in a very good way, I think. So that's my little defense for Whispers of Terror.
I mean, I'd still put Sirens of Time much higher. I actually like Body Doctor stories. I think what they tried to do was good, and I think there's a couple of really great episodes in there. And also Winter of the Adept. Actually, I think that's got a few good things. It's got India Fisher in it as well, in a different role. It's interesting. We had Joe Sims on last podcast, well, recently, and one of the things we said to Joe Sims was, we know he must be a nice guy, because when you play a few characters in Big Finish and they bring you back as a companion, it means they want to hang around you. And Evelyn Smythe, so Maggie Stable, she was in Sirens of Time. I get stuck on that all the time. And they brought her back as Evelyn. India Fisher was in Land of the Dead, and they brought her back. So they find actors. They think, we love these actors, we want to bring them back.
Rob, did you realise that it was Maggie Stables in Sirens of Time? So Evelyn,
no.
playing the old hag. That's Evelyn.
Not at all.
There you go, yes, so that's there. So her and, because that was directed and written by Nick Briggs, and he and Maggie Stables sort of worked together in a couple of plays. So that's how he knew Maggie and brought her in, and then decided, you know, they wanted to keep her as a character.
It was actually her characterisation in the first episode of Sirens of Time that sort of turned me off a little bit, but after getting to know Evelyn, I can go back to Sirens of Time now, hear Maggie Stables, and I'm okay with it now. But when I first heard it, it was kind of, a bit off-putting.
That cackling witchy sort of character.
Yeah.
They like that. Well, listen, thank you for your list of 10, Rob. It's interesting to see, and we're looking forward to hearing what you think about the next 10 episodes, because we introduce a new Doctor into the mix when that happens. So we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Hi, this is Paul Morris, and you're listening to The Sirens of Audio.
G'day Audiophiles, you are listening to The Sirens of Audio, the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who in the audio medium. My name is Dwayne, and this fella next to me is...
Philip. G'day everyone, great to be here.
Seems like forever since we've got together for a recording, Philip. We've had a bit of a build-up of episodes, and we could give ourselves a little break.
Yeah, we had a few things in the can. It's been a special week for me, and thank you, Dwayne, because this is my one-year anniversary of having being on your podcast. So glad you asked me on. What a great year.
Happy anniversary. I was going to say that next episode, because next episode is your 50th.
Oh, is it my 50th?
This is your 49th.
Whoa, okay. Oh, I feel old and tired now.
it's been an awesome year. We've had some amazing conversations with some incredible people, and yeah, it's been good to be able to share the journey with you. So thank you.
It has been a blast. I've had a lot of fun. Hopefully our audiophiles, that they've had fun too. But and some amazing stuff to come still.
Well, we certainly do. But this episode is going to be another one of...
We've got Randomoids.
You guessed it. We've got Randomoids again. And last month, the Randomoid Selectatron selected Jago and Lightfoot Volume 8 for us, so we decided instead of doing two selections from the Selectatron, we would just do the one and review all four stories within the box set. But before we do, Philip, let's instead of going down the rabbit hole, I thought we could have a chat about some of the releases that have come out, because we normally record a long time in advance, but we can actually talk about some things that are a bit current. But we'll go back a month or so and talk about some of the releases that that we haven't yet talked about. Now, on the last Randomoids episode, we tried to predict the story of the Ninth Doctor adventures, Ravages. How close do you think we got, Philip?
Well, about 3%. Christopher Eccleston was in it.
He was in it. Now, I did predict... I don't think it was a prediction so much as just me picking up on clues from behind the scenes that I heard that it was set pre-Rose. The thing that got me was that it was a great science fiction story, and it was I saw another YouTuber reviewing it, and he made a very good point about this, that this was the first time we had heard Christopher Eccleston away from the Russell T. Davies era. And so we're getting a slightly different story. And I thought it was interesting that the story that Nick Briggs chose was such a complex science fiction story involving a lot of timey-wimey stuff. Do you think that worked as an introduction to the Ninth Doctor Adventures?
It's interesting to me because it copped a bit of flack from people. But I thought it was brilliant. I actually think Nick did the right approach. I think he could have just done the standard, you know, in the future, in the past, set in the real time, which is what he did with the David Tennant seasons. So the David Tennant boxes were very much set in the same model as R.T. Davis. I think the fact that Nick made a bold choice to do something very different with Christopher Eccleston really worked. So I was actually glad that he did it the way he did. I know people got confused with the story. A lot of those were people who I think you don't listen to Big Finish a lot, and maybe you don't listen to Nick's stories a lot, because it was very Nick. It was all over the place chronologically. But that actually, to me, I like that style. I think it builds excitement.
I think those stories that he does are usually slightly better than when he just tries to tell a straight tale. So I actually like the fact that he mixes them up and throws time around. I think it means it's better value, because listening to it one time is not good enough for you. You have to go back and listen to it again to actually, you know, get the most out of it. And with the second listening, you get so much more, because you do actually know where it's going and you have some better ideas. So I actually think it's going to be one of those stories I can listen to over and over again without getting bored with it, which a lot of straight storytellings, you know, you listen to it once, you enjoy it at the time, but then it's finished. Where this is one that you can't be finished with. So I actually think that what he did was the right thing to do. I think it stretched Christopher nicely. I think it brought in a companion in an unusual way and a slower way. A bit all over the place too. But I think, you know, I'm looking forward to what happens with the next box set, which I think is a lot more standard. But I thought this was a good way to do it. What did you think?
I loved it as well, particularly the characterization. Christopher Eccleston stepped back in and it was like he'd never left. I thought it was just, it was brilliant. It was perfectly him. He was snappy as the Doctor, pretty fast paced. And it was interesting to see him without Rose. We never saw him without Rose on the television. So it was an interesting change in that regard. I think I may have listened to one or two of the stories twice because I thought, oh, this is more complex than I thought it was going to be. So my mind may have wandered. I may have been doing something while I was listening to it, and I had to go back and listen again. But yeah, it has a really good payoff. And I think that the companion that's in this one is not going to be in the next box set. Is that right?
I thought she was, but I now need to go and check that. You know how bad I'm with checking. You know how bad I am with checking blurbs and credits and things before I listen to the story. So,
because I really enjoyed her as Nova as a companion.
Didn't she leave with him? I thought she left with him at the end.
Yes, but I don't think she's going to be there in the next set, because this was like a self-contained three-part story, whereas the next box set is going to be three standalone stories. So, not quite sure how they're going to do it, and I. Now that you're unsure about it, I could be wrong too. That's the impression that I got from that. One thing that I did pick up on in the extras was Nick Briggs talking about how the cast were telling him that it was a great non-linear storytelling style, and he was relating the fact that he was speaking to a podcaster about this non-linear style, and he was being described that way. And I put it to him, because it was around that time that he invited me onto the Big Finish podcast to talk about Paul Sprag. And I said, was that me you were talking about? He said, yes, it was. It was me that he was talking about. So I was pretty chuffed about that even though I'm not name-checked, I know it's me that he was talking about on those extras. So that was pretty thrilling.
I knew it was you as soon as he said it. That lousy, you know, pain in the backside, Dwayne Bunny telling me my stories aren't linear.
Yeah, well, he did ask me. He wanted to know what I thought of his style. And he thought, well, there you go. If that's what they think, I'm going to keep pumping them out.
Well, all right, let's move on. I just checked. Yeah, she's not in the credits.
Yep.
So there you go.
So I was right. Okay, I've got to go with my gut instead of doubting myself all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to another release from last month, and that was the Third Doctor Adventures. Now, this was a historic one, Volume 7. Historic in that none of the original cast from that era appear in the whole set, because all the actors have passed away. So everyone in there is a recast. We've got Tim Treloar, obviously, as the Third Doctor. We've got the Brigadier, played by John Coleshaw. We've got Sarah Jane Smith, played by Sadie Miller. And we've got Liz Shaw, played by Daisy Ashford. And give us your thoughts on this one. Do you remember there was two stories in there? The first one featuring Liz Shaw was called the Unzahl Incursion, written by a long-term Big Finish writer, Mark Wright. What did you think of that, Philip?
I enjoyed it. It was a bit weird knowing that there was no one in it. And at first when I saw it being advertised, I was a bit sort of, because I sort of think, you know, at least put Katie Manning in. She's still with us and going strong. But that being said, I actually do love the Liz Shaw character. And even though I think she probably sounds, I think Sadie Miller sounds a lot more like her mum than, I've forgotten who's playing her mum.
Daisy.
Daisy does. I still think it was the character just works so well. And it was a lovely unit story. I loved the set about unit base. I think they gave women more things to do, so it was a bit unusual that way, because they actually had some women officers, and Liz was played a powerful role. More to the next story. But yeah, I enjoyed it. What about you?
Well, it's interesting that we have already had, I think maybe in box set 5, we did have the Joe Grant, Liz Shaw meeting episode, Primord. So that's already happened. So there's only so many times you can have them crossing over and meeting. I think it worked really well. Tim Treloar and John Coleshaw are just absolutely sensational. You can just let your mind drift away and you just think you're right back there in that era. And I know that Benji Clifford was working on the Unzahl incursion with the sound design, along with Nick Briggs on the music. So they don't often work together. I remember them saying how much they enjoyed that. And because this is a Series 7 story, there are lots of nods to the sound design from Series 7, which I really, really enjoyed. They even had the Ambassadors of Death opening sting with the theme, like they do. I hope you didn't skip it, Philip.
No, you couldn't skip it. It just happened. Bang, you were there. Hand of choice.
So that was fantastic. As far as the golf goes, it was an interesting one. Lots of female cast in this one. I think it was all female cast.
All female except for the doctor. Yep.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one. I'm not sure. It's really hard to say whether Sadie improved on Sarah Jane Smith since the Return of the Cybermen, because there was large sections of Return of the Cybermen that she didn't appear in, because remember she was sick for like full episodes in
the
one.
The character was, yes.
Yes, that's right. So I'm not sure, but I thought she did a sensational job. And as far as, recasting goes, I know there's a lot of people that like to get upset about recasting, but just fair dinkum, get over it. If you don't like recasting, just don't listen to it. You don't have to listen to it, but there are those of us who have given it a go, and these stories are really worth telling, and they are telling them well. That's the one thing about Big Finish, is that if they announce something, there have not been very many times in Big Finish history, which is now very long, it's decades long, there haven't been many times where I've been disappointed when they've announced something that seems a little bit strange. Like I was, for instance, most recently, I think I was a little bit skeptical of the Rose Tyler, the Dimension Canon box set, which came out last year. But I gave that a chance. I listened to it and it was great. I thought it was sensational. Some people may not agree with me. You may not agree with me, Philip. I don't know. But it was one of those ones that I was skeptical about. And I went, right, yep, of course, Big Finish are doing it. They're doing a great job. And it's the same with this one. They are very respectful of the eras. And it's shown not just in the recasts themselves, but in the attention to sound design. From all the sound designers and musicians, it's particularly these era-specific box sets that are very, very specific, because you've got the different sound design for the Sarah Jane Smith than you do for Liz. So totally different eras from one end of the Third Doctor to the other. Completely different tone in those. And they're very faithful to that, and they do a very, very respectful and professional and, I say, sensational job.
Yeah, the music was amazing. I think Nick Briggs has just nailed it. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the music of the 70s in terms of just to listen to. It's a lot more sitting scenes and a tone colour. But boy, that tone colour was nailed, so you felt like you were there. And I'm prepared to say that Sadie Miller has improved heaps, because it was, she's just managed to pick up her mother's timbre. So that line after line was like I was listening to Elizabeth Sladen. I wouldn't have known regularly that it wasn't her, because it was just the inclination. Oh, I've got the word again. I got it wrong when I was talking to Sadie, for goodness sake. Intonations are just perfect. And I know that she'd done a lot more research, watched some more stuff. I was actually chatting with Sadie a couple of days ago about what she's doing in terms of watching some of her mum's stuff, some research she was doing. I've got some ideas to chat with you about later, actually. But that, Dwayne?
Oh, excellent. Mm. Look forward to it. There was a few other releases from last month that I haven't heard yet. The Thunderbirds one I haven't heard yet, but Avalon Volume 1 came out. That contained three stories. It's a Blake 7, World's a Blake 7 release. And this one seemed to me to be really, really exciting. Sally Nevette as Jenna and Stephen Greif as Travis, featuring in that box set, with Olivia Poulet as Avalon. So she'd appeared as Avalon in a Big Finish story before. Was it a Companion Chronicle? I think it might.
No.
It was the Way Forward.
The big anniversary special they did with everyone.
That's right. Yeah. So that was really good. Three stories in there. The first one was called Terra Firma, written by Steve Lyons. So always a good one to fall back on. I went into this not knowing anything about where it was going to be set or how it was set. And it was set at the same time in Blake 7 chronology as the very first Blake 7 episode. So these things were happening while Blake was on trial in The Way Back. So I think that was really cleverly done and a great way to start this set. The second one, Throwback by Gary Russell, that was a two-hander featuring Travis. It was virtually an interrogation episode, which was really cool. Blackwater by Trevor Baxendale was the third one, featuring the character of Dev Tarrant. I get all the Tarrants mixed up. Yeah, Dev Tarrant. He was the bad guy with the snarly lip from the first episode. So he's obviously he's been recast because that actor's no longer with us. But yeah, so that was a really interesting character to bring in, because in the Blake 7 Chronicles, Dev Tarrant was killed at one point. So we've got stories involving him. We know he's ultimately going to be killed, but what was he getting up to in the meantime? So I thought this was a great way to start set the scene for Avalon, and sort of because Jenna makes that throwaway line in Project Avalon that she knows Avalon. And so, yeah, so they turned the whole first episode into that story of how she knew Avalon, and she virtually hands over the Blake 7 torch to Avalon by the end of it. So I thought that was really, really good. And Stephen Greif, you can listen to his voice forever. And combine Stephen Greif's voice with Gary Russell's writing, I don't think Gary Russell writes enough. He should write more. I think he's fantastic. What did you think of that set, Philip?
Well, you've basically said everything. What can I say? I do think Sally Nevette was amazing, and it was a handing over of the mantle, which was, I think, nicely done. So, Sally, pass it over. And it was interesting, because once again, how did Jenna end up in that jail cell with Blake? You actually saw it happen. So you knew the whole episode, how it was going to end in part. But there was still a lot of suspense along the way. It's a bit of a Ocean's 11 kind of story. The highlight for me was that second episode. That was basically a two-hander, but that the whole scene backwards and forwards with Travis, and once again, you know that they're slowly introducing the new cast who are going to be the new Blake 7 cast bit by bit. And so you had this character that was slowly being introduced and you know is going to become more pivotal. But those scenes, and the dialogue was just breathtaking, and the slow reveal of what was going on, it was stunning writing. And you're right, Gary is a brilliant writer who doesn't write off enough. It was kind of a bit of Gallifrey-ish with politics and other bits and pieces. And there's also a companion chronicle called Three, which is with Jacqueline Pierce as a two-hander. It had some moments like that in it too. Very powerful, evil versus good, and where's the twist going to come? And yeah, and then the third story, putting together a few more of the characters, a bit more of a heisty idea as well. Yeah, I've got the second box set now, waiting to listen to it. I put it on hold so I could listen to these Jagged on Lightfoots.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about a couple of the releases for June. Out of Time 2, The Gates of Hell. Have you heard that one yet?
I have. And how wonderful hearing Peter Davison and David Tennant together. And it was a great story. It was a lot of fun. I just kept smiling all the way through it.
Yeah. Another timey-wimey story, worth more than one listen. And it has those great Cybermen, invasion Cybermen in it. So, yeah, fantastic. Can't rave about. David Tennant's back with me. He's back.
Oh, you like him again, though,
I just can't wait for that. Dalek Universe is coming out in a few weeks, so I can't. Dalek Universe 2, I should say. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. Other big release for this month has been The Robots Volume 4. This is a series I want to go back and listen to from the start again. It's a fantastic series. I was a little bit nervous at the end of The Robots 3 as to how it was. I had a feeling it might have been crossing over somewhat with the Magic Bullet series of Kaldor City. Just the way it ended on that cliffhanger. I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't heard it, but I didn't have to worry because it hasn't crossed over with Kaldor City at all. And it's taken a course this time that's extremely fascinating. Particularly, there's one story in there by Guy Adams. I think he was it the first one, Closed Loop. Yeah, with I think it's David Colling's last performance.
It is his last performance, which is just tragic because before he passed away.
Yeah, and he's playing pool in this one, and Guy Adams writes this type of psychological, psychedelic story so well. It reminded me of Adamant Lives because Guy Adams was in charge of that project, and if you enjoyed that, you're going to enjoy. Particularly Closed Loop in this box set. So it's, really, really good. A couple of other stories in there. Off-Grid and the Janus Deception. Just really enjoyable stuff. Getting to know... I just want to know what's going to happen now. It didn't really end on a massive cliffhanger, like an emotionally...
It kind of did.
It was a sort of a cliffhanger. But it didn't sort of end with a bang. It was like
everything's changed.
It was almost like a sharp intake of breath, but not so much a bang. So, what was your thoughts on the Robots 4?
Yeah, I've been enjoying. I do wonder how they were going to do it all in four boxes originally, because of course they extended the four boxes to six boxes, and the way the story was telling was going, I couldn't work out how they were possibly going to fit the story into four boxes. So they must be selling well to have done that, which is great. I mean, I've been enjoying for the last three box sets the Toos and Pool storyline.
I know you can't get enough of Pamela Salem.
No, I love Pamela Salem and David Collins. And I mean, the first half of that episode is just a two-hander with just the two of them, and they're breathtaking. And then they bring in the actor who played D-84 as well.
Gregory DePaulnay.
Well done.
Isn't his voice sensational?
Yeah.
He's got such a good voice for audio.
Yeah. Yeah, so that first episode, and you can see how they could have kept using David Collins, but you also see they have been able to find a way to end it. Because I thought at the end of last box set, it would have been just tragic if he hadn't done another one. So it's so good that we have this story, and they've cleverly removed him from the scene, which is both tragic but also done in a careful way, so it's not going to disrupt the storyline. But yeah, Pamela Salem goes on, which is keeping my heart happy. But yeah, great stories, and just dying for the next one. And I should say, Claire Rushbrook too, and...
Nicola Walker
are amazing actresses. And one of the episodes where Claire's been put on trial, and the whole... I mean, it's funny at times, but also quite nerve-wracking to see the different storylines going... The way they're using those characters, it's brilliant. I'm the fact that it's going in six box sets now, I'm sad about. It needs 12 or 15.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we know it has to end because we know Liv gets back with the Doctor again. So, yeah, that's a shame.
Maybe they can push her back in time for 6 months or something. Something happens and she has to relive another 6 months and...
So in the next week we've got War Doctor Begins coming out. Looking forward to that.
I am. So once again, recasting though, but I don't mind. His voice is astounding.
It's very, very good. Very good. And directed by Louise Jameson. So Always good to see Louise playing a slightly different role in the Big Finish family. So that's great. It'd be good for her too. Enjoyable for her. All right, let's get to the topic of our podcast today, which is Randomoids. What are we up to? Randomoids 4?
Yeah, painful.
Randomoids 4, the Phantom Selectatron. Yeah, if we're going that way. All right. So the Randomoid Selectatron threw up Jago and Lightfoot Volume 8.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Jago and Lightfoot, Series 8.
Oh, my word! Dum, dum,
dum. We're the Scorchers, sir! This may blow your tidy noggin, old boy, but we are alien!
They're mean and malign, and they mangle my mind with malevolent musical modes. Their incessant rhyming has slowly been climbing up through my head till it explodes!
Bring up that lamp, would you, Henry? And hail them.
Ahoy there! This is Henry Gordon Jago, consultant to Her Majesty's Metropolitan Police.
Anyways, I'm Patsy.
Patsy?
Yeah, Patsy. And this chiseler, he's had away with me bleeding fish.
You idiot! He's ruined it!
You have her safely confined, I hope.
She didn't give me much choice, state she was in. Ranting and raving and biting my constables.
Beg pardon?
It's all right, Elia. You leave them to me. I'm your inspector. You can pass off and all.
Hey, this is the light.
Don't stop that, Henry. I can hardly hear myself sick as it is. Never mind the whistle.
Good night. The end is nigh of that. We're certain, Jago and Lightfoot. It's time we reach our final.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Now, listening to this again just reminded me how much of an absolute pleasure this whole series is. You know, Big Finish puts out so much that I try very hard to keep up. Sometimes I fall behind. And some of the Jago and Lightfoots I've only heard once. This is probably one of the box sets that I've only heard once before since release, and I'm so glad I was able to listen to this one. Trevor Baxter and Christopher Benjamin together are just, they are, it reminded me why Jago and Lightfoot is my favourite Big Finish spin-off that they've ever done. I know yours is Gallifrey, Philip, but this has got to be a close second, surely.
I don't like to try and rate them because they're just too good.
Yeah. So, different style altogether,
so
really.
Can I go back? Because I want to go back because, I'm a huge fan of Companion Chronicles. And
yes, yes.
The Doctor, and, of course, this all started because of a Companion Chronicle. So season 3 of the Companion Chronicles, David Richardson said he loved the idea of trying to bring back Jago and Lightfoot. And it was just done it was supposed to be a two-hander, except Lisa Bowman threw herself in for free because they wrote a third character. So she wasn't paid. For that she's just stepped in as the director just to do the extra voices and as a favour because the budget was tight. But that Companion Chronicle just showed what was possible. And then you get a whole box set based on sort of the sequel to the Companion Chronicle because Tulk is the baddie and they sort of flesh him out over a whole box set. And the thing I love about every box is every box set has a different theme along the way, which is sort of a calling card to each theme. So be it Tulk, be it Leela, be it the Sixth Doctor. They go to the 60s, which I think is the biggest scream. You've got working for the Queen and doing odd jobs for her, and then they're on the run because they've all been set up. So it's Jago Life on the run. Then you've got this season, and I've got to talk to you about what you think the theme is. But then you've got the crews, you've got masters, you've got vampires. Parallel Worlds, it's just every box set is self-contained but has this lovely theme to it. And it was interesting with this one because it took me a while to work out what the theme was.
I was going to talk to you about that because I don't think there is a theme.
There is.
I think that they're setting this back to some self-contained stories, although the episode 3 and 4 are connected, but they're self-contained stories in the same setting, in their Victorian setting, without any big arc going on. That's what I got out of it anyway. You've obviously listened a little bit deeper than I have.
There is a theme, but we'll see whether you pick it on
we'll
the way
through. We'll get to that. Okay. Let's talk about this, Encore of the Scorchies by James Goss. Now, to talk about the Scorchies, we've probably got to mention
Companion Chronicles.
The Scorchies.
What a surprise.
Another Companion Chronicles. Tell us about that one.
So the Scorchies is a Companion Chronicle which starred, I'm sure it was Katie Mann. I think it was by James Goss. I meant to check that, but I'm pretty sure he wrote that as well. He just has a twisted mind. So the Scorchies is set in a 70s TV studio. Joe Grant's been captured by this bunch of marauding puppets who are going to send out a TV signal to destroy the whole world to give them life. They're beings that travel through space on special waves, and they can inhabit bodies, and they've taken over all these puppets. So they're kids' puppets who end up being totally ruthless and evil. So I listened to it this week because I love it.
Sounds silly, but it's one of those things where a crazy idea, Big Finish gets their hands on it, put a competent writer like James Goss in charge of writing a story like this, and, mate, it blows you away.
Yep.
Absolutely blows you away.
And that was Katie Manningham, Mervyn Haynes from Eight Half Hot Mum fame. And the two of them managed to do about 15 different voices. And there's songs throughout it, as well as all the drama. It's just a brilliant episode. And David Richardson listened to it, loved it, and said, we need them again. And went, I know, Jago and Lightfoot.
So this one's called Encore of the Scorchies, even though it's set before the Scorchies story from the 70s. So, I've already got a big, huge appreciation for Howard Carter, but now I have even more of an appreciation for Howard Carter. He is a genius. Because if you look at if you've got it on your app, you look at the extras. If you look at the extras on your app, you'll get all the sheet music for every song. So you can print it out as a PDF and have the full songbook for this. And I've got to say that I'm not a person who seeks out musicals to watch. I'm not going to go, oh, I might just watch a musical today. But whenever I go to the theatre to watch a musical, or if someone wants to watch a musical with me, I always enjoy musicals. And I think you're more of a musical connoisseur than I am. But I just loved every second of this. I love the songs. I love the lyrics, particularly Lisa Bauman's performance at the end. I think that was very, very well done, and the lyrics were very funny. And despite the Scorchies being an alien menace that it looks completely stupid, they are very scary at the same time. And this is, is this only the second time that Big Finish has attempted a musical? Or have they done others?
There's this one, there's the Scorchies, and there's the Pirates.
So that's three.
I'm pretty sure it's the three. I think there's one or two songs and some other ones.
Paternoster Gang, have they done anything?
No, River Song and Jago do a song in when River goes to
That's right.
The theatre. So they've got a song at the end, which is hilarious. There is in a Benny show, The Worst Thing in the Universe, is actually Benny having to sing to save the universe at the end. So Benny sings a song in that. But in terms of actually trying to do a musical, it's really the Pirates and this and Scorchies are the three big ones.
And as a musical fan yourself, how would you rate this?
Oh, it's great. I mean, the thing about a musical, people think the musicals are just stories with songs. They're not. The point of a song is a song has to progress the storyline. So if a song isn't progressing the storyline, it's not a musical. It is just mm-hmm. songs inserted, which is a bit like High School Musical. Very few of those actually progress the storyline. They're just songs that they can often give what the character's thinking. But a couple of these songs in here are major plot points, and in fact, is the exposition. So it'd be great if you actually put put in maybe a bit of Ellie's song at the end, because you know, in that song, that is the exposition. She's describing in the song everything that's actually happening and how the Scorchers is going to be defeated. But thrown in with that is the humour, the fact of how that character gets used in every story, which is, you know, she's at the beginning, she pops up at the end, they have the adventure in the middle. And so he's actually riffing on that idea that that's all she's there for, and they put it into words. So it's self-referencing, which makes it a lot funnier. So yeah. I mean, I love it. And there's some poignant moments. I mean, what they could have done, I mean, they filmed all that in one day, which is extraordinary, that they managed to sort of record the whole thing in one day. It's extraordinary they managed to get the quality they got in one day, because that should have been, you know, a few days of work in recording studios. And it's a tribute to the cast.
And if you listen to the extras, there's a song that Christopher Benjamin does there, a solo, and he does that in one take. So, and he says to Lisa, do you want me to do that again? Do you want me to make that a little bit better? And she goes, no, that's perfect. So, yeah, it was quite a testament to the whole team to get that done in a day.
Yeah. The only thing, I mean, I would love it to be longer. It was, because really, you have the intro, then it's several months later, and the entire action then takes place within an hour or two. I mean, I could have had an entire box set of the Scorchies, happily. So, Big Finish, we're listening. More Scorchies and a whole box set to them.
No, fantastic. All right. The second story on that box set was called The Backwards Men by Andy Lane. It says there's unrest in the streets of London and strange creatures who walk backwards. What is the link to Wednesday's world of weird wonders? So out of the whole box set, this is kind of the most standalone, I guess, out of the lot. Even though Encore of the Scorchies is standalone too. But Andy Lane, interesting to note that he wrote The Mahogany Murderers. So he was the one that introduced Jago and Lightfoot to the Companion Chronicles, which spurned that massive series of 13. Actually, 14. Series 14 is about to be released in the next... If it's not out by the time you hear this, it will be within a week or two. That's for sure, as audiobooks. So it's a testament to Andy's writing that, as well as the Christopher Benjamin and Trevor Baxter, their chemistry that got Jago and Lightfoot up and running as a series. So give us your thoughts on this story, The Backwards Men.
Yeah, it's a very typical Jago and Lightfoot tale. It's, I mean, Andy did the Companion Chronicle. He did a story for Box 1, 2, and 3, but then he hasn't done a story since then till now, Box 8. I think he felt he needed a break just in terms of, you know, yeah, doing some other stuff and that. Certainly, it's a great typical story. It is very... Professor Lightfoot gets to do some very, very amusing things because he gets taken over by an alien. But, well, so it doesn't get taken over by an alien, but ends up sharing his body with an alien. And so the indulgences in terms of humour, in terms of going to restaurants and trying the things that, yeah, George would never normally do.
He hosts an alien.
He hosts an alien.
Inside his mind.
And so there's all sorts of crazy, funny things happening there. So that storyline's all happening on one side, while, you know, Jago's having the other storyline, and then they come together. So they do mix nicely together. There's some lovely moments, some lovely humour. Yeah, enjoyed it.
Okay. So as far as the whole box set goes, this was probably the story that had... Oh, it's really hard to rank them, but it had the least impact on me out of all four stories. I suppose something's got to have the least impact. I enjoyed it. I love those sideshow aspects. It's a typical of Victorian era. Pretty creepy stuff. But yeah, it had the least impact on me. Not to say it's a bad story. Absolutely not. So that brings us on to the next story, Jago and Lightfoot and Patsy. Written by favourites of the actors themselves, Simon Barnard and Paul Morris. And I really love this story. Introduces a mudlark, Patsy, to investigate a mystery that's happening on the banks of the Thames River. So what are your thoughts? Do you think this character is the same character from The Talons of Wang Chiang that's got no teeth and is there on the shores of the Thames saying, what are the words that she uses in Talons of Wang Chiang? It's a floater, all right. You think that's the same character?
There's obviously a big,
or just based on her.
Yeah, I think it's a big nod to her at least, and you know that Patsy was the name of the actress who played that character, so it's certainly a nod to her. I mean, Patsy is an amusing character. I mean, one of the things that Jago and Lightfoot already does is it already mixes different class levels, because you know Victorian London is you know quite class light like, and even though you know George Lightfoot isn't aristocracy or even upper class, he's upper middle class. He's wealthy. He's sort of like a Professor Higgins sort of level, where Jago is, you know, a different step down, upper working class would be Jago. So you've already got the mixture here. But then you throw in the lower working class with Patsy, and you're really getting an amusing mix. So it does cross the layers of generation, the class as well. And I think that's one of the things that works for it, as these characters start playing backwards and forwards between class levels, understanding, education, wealth, and then throw in an alien invasion as well, you're all set.
And out of that duo, Simon and Paul, Paul is the one that adds a lot of... Isn't he the one that adds a lot of the jokes? I can't remember if it's him or Simon that adds all the jokes. I think Paul's got that quirky sense of humour that really stands out in their scripts, which is possibly one of the ingredients that Christopher Benjamin and Trevor Baxter really loved with their scripts. And why they continue to write regularly from then until the end of the series. So, yeah, a really, really interesting story. It seemed to be all done and dusted, but then ended in an extremely funny way. Like I said, it's been so long since I heard it. I thought, that's a funny, over-the-top ending to the story. I wonder if that's a cliffhanger. And... I was right. It was a cliffhanger, because this story leads directly into the fourth story in the set, Hickson and Quick, by Justin Richards. He's the script editor on Jago and Lightfoot, I think, for most of them.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep, yeah, that's right.
So this sort of carries on from the previous story, in as much as it turns Jago and Lightfoot into the bad guys, which is a very interesting spin on the Jago and Lightfoot universe. And we haven't mentioned Quick yet. We've got to remember that throughout the whole Jago and Lightfoot series, Quick, was he Sergeant Quick in the TV show? He's now an inspector.
No, he wasn't Sergeant. He was lower than Sergeant. He was only below Sergeant. Constable. He's Constable Quick in the TV show. He becomes Sergeant Quick at the start of Jago and Lightfoot. He's now been promoted to Inspector.
Inspector. Yeah, so he's there, and he ends up teaming up with Ellie to try and solve the weird goings-on around Jago and Lightfoot and why they're acting so strange. And there's an interesting character in this story played by Andrew Grenor, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but it's Jeremiah Castle, which in the extras, Paul Morris talks about Jeremiah Castle and the history surrounding that character and the place that, I can't remember the place in the story that it's set, but the area that he sort of looked after. And it was quite Scooby-Doo, really. The way Jeremiah Castle is portrayed. He's portrayed, and even the whole box set's portrayed as a supernatural range of stories. They're not supernatural at all, because they're always explained really well in a science fiction-y type of way, which I really like that kind of storytelling. So it was nice to see Jago and Lightfoot acting in a different way, and once again, some very funny moments. So I thoroughly enjoyed this story too.
It's a bit of a play on the end. Ellie's song in the end of Scorchies is that she'll never get a spin-off at this rate. So she's saying, I'd like to have a spin-off, like, you know, playing on the whole Jago Lightfoot spin-off. But then by the fourth episode, she has a spin-off. Because it's no longer Jago and Lightfoot, it's now Hickson and Quick are now the heroes. So I thought it was amusing that she gets her spin-off.
Ah, there's your theme.
No, that's not my theme. But she gets a spin-off. Okay, so want to talk about theme?
Yes.
Okay, so in Onco the Scorchies, Jago gets taken over by the Scorchies. In The Backwards Men, Lightfoot gets taken over by the police officer, the space police officer.
Yes.
Then in The Backwards Men, there was a takeover. I should have written it down. And then, of course, the very last episode, Jago and Lightfoot are both taken over by aliens as well to do their bidding. So it's actually...
So who's taken over in Jago and Lightfoot and Patsy? Is it Patsy?
Yeah, Patsy's taken over. And I think there's another takeover too. So I think there's actually a running theme of bodies being taken over by other people, creatures. Not always bad, because the police officer and takes over Lightfoot isn't a baddie. But there's this taking over... All the stories contain the idea of bodies being taken over, people being possessed and going against their will. It's just four stories which all contain the same idea.
I see it now, but I wouldn't have seen it on my own without your help. So I'm glad you were there, Phil. Thank you for that.
Great.
Oh, this has really made me want to go back to the start and start Jago and Lightfoot right from the beginning.
Yeah, me too. I haven't got time. There's too much to listen to at the
moment. I know. It's awful.
This podcast has taken over my life, so I can't listen to anything else now.
Oh, man. Fair dinkum. Big Finish, can you go under so that you don't put out any new stuff so we can catch up on all the old stuff? No, don't do that. Keep putting out that great new stuff. So, that was great. Really enjoyed going through that. So shall we see what the Selectatron will throw out at us for next time? Shall we do that?
You did a great job this time because I really did love that. So let's see what's coming up. What is this?
Okay.
Surprise me.
First one is... Oh! Excellent. I'm looking forward to this one. This is the 8th Doctor Adventures, Series 2.8, The Vengeance of Morbius.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do that one. We might have to... We won't review it, but we might have to listen to the previous one, Sisters of the Flame, isn't it?
Yes.
To get a full story, because the two stories sort of merge into each other, but we can just talk about Vengeance of Morbius on the day. All right, second one. I don't want to do that one.
What was that one?
The Veiled Leopard. I don't want to do that one.
Okay.
Oh, okay. It's going to be an 8th Doctor show.
Okay.
Because we'll do this one. This is one that needs reviewing because it was often given a bit of stick. This is an 8th Doctor story written by Will Schindler from October 2005. It is Scaredy Cat.
Okay.
So we're going to do The Vengeance of Morbius and we're going to do Scaredy Cat for our next Randomoids. Randomoids 5. Ooh. That'll be... Attack of the Selectatron, won't it? All right. Just to give you an idea of what else is coming up over the next month, we're going to be doing not only that, but Philip, we're also going to be doing a show. Might get another guest to come on to help us with this. But we're going to do a slight return show. So classic series monsters that make an appearance just once in Big Finish. So not Daleks, not Cybermen. So the stories that I've got lined up that I want to talk about for this particular show are Return to the Web Planet, Return of the Crotons, and The Feast of Axos.
Hmm.
So those three we'll be discussing too, hopefully over the next month. That's me discussing it with Philip, by the way, for those. I hope you agree with that, Philip.
Yeah, I guess so. No, that'd be fun.
So, and the reason I was inspired to do that was because our friends on the Doctor Who show
I knew that.
are very shortly going to be reviewing What are they going to be reviewing? Holy Terror, aren't they? But they put a poll up of potential stories, and one of them was Return of the Crotons. I think Dave Kitchen chose Return of the Crotons. I thought, oh, yeah, I haven't heard that for a while. Let's do that ourselves. Because he was curious about the whole Charlie arc. Wasn't Charlie an Eighth Doctor companion? But she's the Sixth Doctor's companion in this one. So that'll be good. So we're going to do that as a full episode of The Sirens of Audio, looking at the slight returning monsters.
And in fact, the Doctor Who show Holy Terror will be out this Sunday. So we're out first, but the episode will be out this Sunday.
Yep, the DWShow.net. Check them out. They don't often talk about Big Finish, maybe only once or twice before in their history.
Yeah, they better not do it too often. They better not start doing it too often either, can I just say? I'm happy for them to do it now. Oh. I was watching them on Twitter. They're talking about doing all this other Big Finish stuff. They better be careful.
It's good, actually, because there needs to be more attention on the audios, in my opinion. Needs to be more, because to me, this is where... this is only my opinion, but this is where the best stories are happening. So you want good Doctor Who stories? This is where you're going to find them.
You want fantastic Doctor Who stories. This is where you find them, not just good ones. This is the best at the moment by far.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely. So let's quickly talk about our recommendations before we go. Boy, we've gone on a bit longer than our promised half an hour for a Randomoid show, but let's talk about our recommendations.
Whose turn is it, Dwayne?
I think it might be your turn, Philip.
Well, there you go. Okay. I'm going to recommend a new podcast I've started listening to called My Adventure in Space and Time. It's by a young, I think she's English, but maybe I should say UK, because I don't know if there are no UK listeners over there. So she's over. She's in the UK, which is, I know lots of you are, so hey, all our UK audiophiles, love you guys. Thanks for listening in. Her name's Gabriel Featherstone. She is a gigantic, massive, massive Doctor Who fan who fell in love with the show when it came back. So in terms of the new Who stuff. But she's realizing she needs to go and listen and see all the original stuff. So she has gone back as a brand new, huge fan of the current show to go back and look at where Doctor Who began from. And so she's reviewing each show, usually 2-3 episodes in her episode, and it's a sort of half an hour chat. She usually brings a friend on as well, so it's nice to get a bit of a female perspective, but also just a new Who fan going back, and she just loves the show, and just watching the original show and going, oh, and getting all the surprises that, you know, we get used to because we've seen so many times. So it's a little half an hour discussion, easy to listen to. She's just charming.
I think I heard the first episode of that show, and I just haven't had a chance to listen to any more. What does she think so far of series one?
She's loving it. So she just picks out all the things that bring her joy. So I'm sure there's stuff in there that you could criticize, and there's certainly a lot of the caveman stuff.
Of course there is.
There's a lot of the caveman stuff. She's sort of going, well, this is strange. But she's focusing on all that's positive. So the characterizations and Barbara and the things that, you know, even when there's a bit of wacky stuff happening, what is it that we have carried through? And it's fascinating watching her examine the character of the Doctor. And because, I mean, William Hartnell did change quite a bit in those first few stories. And so she's noting the change of characterization and then comparing it with the new series as well and where Doctor Who would end up. So it's an interesting discussion, and she, I think she's actually a comedian by trade, but it's just entertaining, lighthearted, and just a lovely, positive look at the show. And when there's so much hate out there about everything, it's nice to have some nice positive.
Hate and outrage, isn't there, Philip?
There is, but that's another discussion. What are you listening to? What are you going to recommend, Dwayne?
I'm going to recommend, I recommended it once before I listened to it, but I have now listened to it and it is so good, I have to recommend it again. It's Christopher Eccleston's autobiography, I Love the Bones of You. It is an amazing audiobook to listen to. Not for so much Christopher Eccleston reading it, because he's not the best reader in the world. Interestingly enough, he's an amazing actor, but I found his reading of the book a little bit difficult to get used to. Maybe because I listened to it at 1.5, Philip. or faster. But I don't know. You didn't even twitch there where I said that, Philip.
Sorry, that just sounds. Can you listen at a slower speed than that?
At 1.5.
Yeah, is it slower than that?
Very funny. No, it goes, and this is a perfect example of a non-linear autobiography. He goes into the present, he goes back into the past, and he talks about all these different things that seem to come to his mind. He talks about his body dysphoria, which he still has. He talks about his mental illness. He talks about his relationship with his father, which and how influential that was. He talks about some of his acting career, particularly at the time that he wrote the book. He was working on The A-Word, which was a series I really got into. Brilliant series. If you haven't seen it, do check it out. Particularly because when I found out that it was... Well, The A-Word is about an autistic boy and his family and how they deal with it. Because my son has autism too, so I was very interested in that show, not only for the fact that it had Chris Eccleston in it. He plays it, but I didn't realize how sick he was during the recording of that. He was going off and getting some serious counseling, and even at one point he ended up in hospital during the recording of that. So he's very, very honest about his life, and it's a very, very touching read. It's quite long, but it's definitely worth it. So I love The Bones of You, Christopher Eccleston. Either get the book and read it. I listen to the audiobook. I'd recommend that too. So okay. That's me.
I have it. I've not listened to it yet. I do have it there waiting to go, but I need to find enough hours to do that.
Yeah, can't recommend it enough. So that's it for the Sirens of Audio for this time. We will see you again very soon. Thank you for listening. Goodbye, Philip.
Goodbye, Dwayne.
And goodbye to all of you. See ya. You have been listening to the Sirens of Audio Episode 63, Randomoids 4, The Phantom Selectatron, with your hosts, Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Next time on the show... Katie Manning will be dropping by to talk about 50 years of Jo Jones, née Grant, her time in Australia, and working in audio. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys. Email address is sirensofaudio@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. Follow us on your favourite podcatcher. Join our Facebook group by searching for the Sirens of Audio on that platform. Tweet us at Audio Sirens. And keep listening to as much audio drama as your randomoids can handle, because audio drama is so cool.